All right, everyone getting ready for the SCE in gastroenterology.
Oh, yeah, big one.
It is. It is. And I know there's one topic that I think is probably on everyone's mind, gastric cancer.
Definitely high yield.
It is. It is. And we've got some great resources today to really do a deep dive.
Yeah, we've got the BSG guidelines, ESMO
Oh, and
guidelines.
some good exam prep notes too.
For sure. So let's make sure you guys are ready to tackle any question they throw at you on the SCE.
Absolutely. So how about we jump right in and take a look at kind of the global landscape of gastric cancer? How does it look worldwide?
Yeah, so there's quite a variation in incidence, geographically speaking. Some regions have really high rates, like East Asia, the Andean regions in South America, Eastern Europe.
Got it.
Then you got some places with a much lower incidence, like North America, Northern Europe, Africa, Southeast Asia, including India.
Okay, that's really interesting. And, I think particularly for those of us practicing in the UK, one thing that I found really fascinating is the difference in incidence between the North and the South.
Oh, right.
The
Yeah.
North actually has a higher rate,
Right.
which really begs the question, what's going on there? What factors are contributing to that difference?
Yeah, that's a great point. And we'll kind of come back to that when we look at risk factors and we can maybe connect some of the dots there.
Perfect, perfect. So, thinking about kind of the demographics then.
Yeah.
Who is most commonly affected by this?
So usually folks between 50 and 60 years old. And it's more common in men, and that ratio can vary depending on where you are, but it's more common in men.
Okay, so location, demographics. I mean, these are all painting a really interesting picture.
Yeah.
Now, another trend that I think is worth highlighting
Yep.
is that we're seeing a decline in distal gastric cancers,
Right.
but an increase in the proximal cancers, particularly those in the cardia. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it just shows that, our understanding of gastric cancer, its risk factors, its pathogenesis, it's evolving. We're learning more and more all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, we've talked about kind of the big picture, the global picture, the trends. Let's dive a little deeper now and really get into the nitty-gritty of the pathophysiology. What's actually happening at the cellular level that leads to the development of gastric cancer?
So it's a multi-step process, often starting with chronic inflammation in the stomach lining. And over time, that chronic inflammation can lead to something called intestinal metaplasia, where the normal stomach lining starts to be replaced by cells that look more like intestinal
So
cells.
it's almost like this kind of precancerous state.
Right, it's a precursor, yeah. And eventually that can progress to dysplasia, where the cells start to become more abnormal. And then ultimately to cancer.
And what's kind of the big driver behind this whole inflammatory process?
Well, the primary culprit, the one we always talk about, H. pylori infection.
H. pylori, right. And we know that's strongly linked to chronic gastritis.
Exactly. It's the biggest risk factor for gastric cancer.
So eradicating H. pylori is obviously paramount then.
For sure.
But it's not the only player of the game,
Oh,
right?
definitely not.
What else should we be thinking
Well,
about?
you got diet, right? High salt diets,
Okay.
processed meats, cured fish, all these things increase your risk.
Got it.
Then, of course, you got the usual suspects, smoking, obesity.
Right.
Those contribute to so many cancers. Even things like prior gastric surgery,
Oh, interesting.
like a Bill Roth II procedure,
Okay.
that can increase your risk.
And what about genetics? Do those play a role as well?
Definitely. Family history is important. Things like familial adenomatous polyposis or FAP or Lynch syndrome, those increase your risk significantly. And specifically, the CDH1 gene mutation, that's linked to hereditary diffuse gastric cancer.
So a whole complex interplay of factors here.
Right.
So it sounds like we've got a lot working against us.
Yeah.
But are there any things that we can do to actually protect ourselves, like lifestyle changes, interventions, anything like that?
Well, diet, again, it's important. Eating lots of fruits and vegetables, that's linked to lower risk.
Got it.
There's also some evidence that NSAIDs might have a protective effect,
Oh, okay.
although we always have to be careful with those.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Now let's switch gears a little bit and talk about early detection.
Yeah.
Because from what I understand, early stage gastric cancer can be pretty silent.
It can be tricky. Yeah.
It can be tricky. So what are some of the things, you know, as clinicians that we should be looking out for, especially as the disease progresses?
Well, as you said, early on, there may not be any symptoms. But as it progresses, you start to see things like unexplained weight loss, persistent epigastric pain, early satiety, so feeling full really quickly after eating.
Okay, so those are all kind of, I mean, there could be signs of a lot of different things.
Right.
Are there any kind of more specific clues that we should be attuned to?
Yeah, definitely. Nausea and vomiting can be red flags.
Okay.
And dysphagia, especially with proximal tumors, that should raise some eyebrows. You might also see occult GI bleeding leading to anemia.
Okay.
And of course, there's always the ominous Virchow's node.
Right. An enlarged left supraclavicular lymph node.
Exactly. Not a good sign.
Not a good sign. So we've got this clinical picture that definitely warrants further investigation.
Yeah.
What's the gold standard for diagnosing gastric cancer?
It's still endoscopy with biopsy. That's the cornerstone.
Okay.
The key is to get enough biopsies. You want at least 6 from both the lesion margins and the central area.
Got it. So we're minimizing the risk of false negatives.
That's exactly. Got to be thorough.
Absolutely. And once we have a confirmed diagnosis, what's the next critical step?
Staging. Accurate staging is crucial.
For treatment decisions, obviously.
Right. It guides everything. So endoscopic ultrasound, or EUS, is really important for staging.
Okay.
It helps us determine the T stage, which tells us the depth of tumor invasion.
Okay.
And the N stage, which tells us about lymph node involvement.
So EUS gives us a good local assessment. But what about the bigger picture? How do we assess potential spread?
That's where imaging comes in. CT scans of the chest, abdomen, and pelvis are crucial.
To rule out metastases.
Exactly. We want to know if it's spread. And if the CT findings are unclear, we might do a PTCT for more information.
Yeah.
And for locally advanced disease, sometimes we need to do laparoscopy to directly check for peritoneal or hepatic metastases.
Okay, makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned the TNM staging system earlier. Yep. Can you break that down for us? I know it's super relevant for the SCE exam.
Sure thing. So the TNM system, it's a standardized way to classify how far the cancer has spread. The T stage describes how deep the tumor has grown into the stomach wall.
Okay.
T1 means it's just in the mucosa or submucosa.
I don't.
T4 means it's grown into nearby organs like the pancreas or spleen.
Wow. So that's pretty advanced.
Yeah. Then the N stage tells us about the lymph nodes.
Okay.
N0 means no lymph nodes are involved.
And N3.
N3 means it's spread to distant lymph nodes.
Okay. So we've got T stage, N stage, and then there's the M stage, right?
Right. M stage is all about distant metastases.
Okay.
N0 means no distant metastases, and M1 means they're present.
All right. So we've talked about diagnosis and staging. Now, the big question, how do we actually manage gastric cancer, and how does staging impact our treatment strategy?
Well, management is tailored to each patient, and the stage really drives our decisions.
That makes sense.
For early stage disease like T1, N0, we often go for endoscopic resection.
Okay.
So EMR, endoscopic mucosal resection, is usually used for smaller lesions under 1 centimeter.
Okay.
And ESD, or endoscopic submucosal dissection, is for larger lesions or those that have invaded a bit deeper.
So those are both minimally invasive options.
Right. Exactly. But what about when the cancer is more advanced?
Yeah, what happens when we're dealing with those T2 to T4 tumors with deeper invasion and maybe even positive lymph nodes?
Then surgery becomes the mainstay of treatment.
Okay.
Usually a subtotal gastrectomy for distal tumors.
Got it.
And a total gastrectomy for proximal tumors.
Okay.
If it's at the gastroesophageal junction, we might do a transiatal total gastrectomy.
And I assume lymph node dissection is a key part of these surgeries.
Absolutely. We do a D2 lymphadenectomy to remove at least 15 lymph nodes.
To ensure thorough staging.
Exactly. And we often recommend perioperative chemotherapy as well.
Okay, like FLOT or ECX.
Right. To improve survival rates.
Okay, so what about metastatic disease? When the cancer has spread beyond the stomach, what are our options then?
In those cases, systemic chemotherapy is the primary approach.
Okay.
We usually use a platinum fluoropyrimidine doublet, like cisplatin and 5-FU.
Right.
And if the tumor is HER2 positive, we add trastuzumab.
Okay. And what about second line options?
We have ramucirumab, which targets VEGF receptor 2,
okay,
and paclitaxel.
Got it. Now, immunotherapy is becoming a big...
Exactly. Now, remember that discussion we had earlier about the higher incidence of gastric cancer in the north of the UK?
Yeah, compared to the south.
Right.
Yeah.
There are probably a few reasons for that difference.
Like what?
Well, socioeconomic factors play a big role.
Okay.
The North tends to have higher poverty rates and lower access to health care.
Right. So that could lead to delays in diagnosis and treatment.
Exactly. Dietary habits could also be a factor.
Okay.
Traditional diets in the North might be higher in salt and smoked or cured foods.
So can we know our risk factors?
Exactly. And don't forget about H. pylori.
Oh, right. H. pylori infection rates are generally higher in areas with lower socioeconomic status and poorer sanitation.
Precisely. So it all ties together.
It's a complex web of factors.
For sure.
And it highlights the importance of looking beyond just the numbers.
Absolutely. Yeah. We need to understand why these patterns exist so we can develop targeted interventions.
I completely agree. Now, I know our listeners are eager to see how this all plays out in real-world scenarios.
Of course. Let's dive into some case studies. Let's do it. So let's say our first case is a 55-year-old man.
Okay.
He's got a 6-month history of progressive dysphagia.
Oh, that's concerning.
Yeah. And unintentional weight loss.
Not good.
No. And he tells you he's got a long-standing habit of eating a diet high in salt and smoked meats.
So right away, we've got a bunch of red flags there. The dysphagia, the weight loss, and a diet that we know is linked to increased risk.
Exactly. What would you do next?
Well, given those symptoms, an upper endoscopy would be at the top of my list.
Definitely. The right call. So let's say the endoscopy shows a large, irregular, ulcerated mass at the gastroesophageal junction, and biopsies confirm adenocarcinoma.
So we've got a diagnosis of gastric adenocarcinoma. Now we need to figure out the stage.
Right. So further workup is done, EUS, and a CT scan of the chest, abdomen, and pelvis.
Okay.
The EUS shows that the tumor is invading the muscularis propria.
Okay.
And there are some suspicious regional lymph nodes, but thankfully the CT scan shows no distant metastases.
So based on all of that, how would we stage this patient's cancer?
Using the TNM system, this would be a T2N1M0 tumor.
Okay, so locally advanced.
Exactly.
And what would be the most appropriate management strategy in this case?
Well, considering the tumor's location and the stage, a transiatal total gastrectomy with a D2 lymphadenectomy would be the standard surgical approach.
All right.
And we'd strongly consider neoadjuvant chemotherapy with a regimen like FLOT.
To shrink the tumor before surgery.
Exactly. Hopefully improve the chances of getting it all out.
This case really highlights the importance of being thorough with our workup. When those red flags pop up, we got to investigate promptly.
Couldn't agree more. All right, let's move on to another case. Let's say we have a 60-year-old woman with a history of H. pylori infection.
Okay.
She comes in with persistent epigastric pain and early satiety.
More red flags.
Right. So she undergoes an endoscopy, and this time it reveals a small flat lesion in the antrum of the stomach. Biopsies come back as well-differentiated adenocarcinoma confined to the mucosa.
So a less aggressive presentation than our previous case.
Seems like it. What about staging?
Well, EUS confirms that the tumor is limited to the mucosa.
Okay.
No suspicious lymph nodes are seen, and imaging studies are negative for distant metastases.
So we're looking at a T1N00 tumor.
Exactly. Early stage disease.
How would you manage this patient?
In this scenario, endoscopic resection would be the way to go.
Okay.
The lesion is small, so an EMR procedure should be sufficient to remove it completely.
Makes sense. Now, how would you approach follow-up care for this patient compared to the first case?
Well, both patients need close monitoring, but the frequency and intensity would definitely be different.
Right.
The patient with locally advanced disease would need more frequent imaging and endoscopies.
Makes sense. We got to tailor the surveillance to their individual risk.
Exactly. These cases really show how the same disease can present in such different ways.
Absolutely.
And it underscores how important it is to understand staging and management principles.
Couldn't agree more. All right, ready for our final case.
Bring it on.
Okay. So this time we have a 70-year-old man with a strong family history of gastric cancer.
Oh.
His father and two siblings all had it. He's presenting with iron deficiency anemia.
All right.
But no abdominal pain or weight loss.
Interesting presentation. With a family history like that, we definitely need to think about a possible genetic predisposition.
Absolutely. So what did the investigations reveal?
Endoscopy showed a diffusely thickened stomach wall.
Okay.
And no normal rugae. That's a classic linitis plastica appearance.
Oh, boy.
And the biopsies.
Confirmed poorly differentiated adenocarcinoma.
Linitis plastica is a tough one. It tends to be very aggressive.
Right. And unfortunately, staging revealed deep invasion into the serosa, and CT imaging showed liver metastases.
So we're looking at stage T4. N0M1.
Yes, advanced disease.
With distant metastases, surgery's off the table.
So what are our options for this patient?
Systemic chemotherapy is the main treatment in this situation. Oh. The goal is to control the disease as best we can and focus on quality of life.
Would we consider any targeted therapies or immunotherapy?
Absolutely. We test for HER2 overexpression.
Because if it's positive, trastuzumab could be added to the chemotherapy regimen.
And what about immunotherapy?
We'd also do PD-L1 testing to see if immunotherapy with the PD-1 inhibitor might be an option.
This case really emphasizes the importance of taking family history into account and being aware of even subtle presentations of gastric cancer, like iron deficiency anemia.
Couldn't agree more. It's a reminder that early detection and pump management are crucial.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, these cases have been incredibly helpful. I think they've really brought all this information to life.
Glad to hear it.
As we wrap up this deep dive, what are some of the key takeaways you want our listeners to remember as they prepare for the SCE?
Okay, first and foremost, H. pylori. It's a major risk factor. Eradicating it is key for prevention.
Absolutely.
Early detection is tough, but it's so important. So pay attention to those red flags, weight loss, epigastric pain, early satiety signs of anemia.
Right. And if you see those red flags, prompt investigation with endoscopy and biopsy is essential.
Exactly. And once we have a diagnosis, accurate staging is paramount. That guides everything.
Absolutely. Endoscopic resection for early stage disease surgery, with perioperative chemo for locally advanced cases, and systemic therapy potentially with targeted agents or immunotherapy for metastatic disease. It all hinges on accurate staging.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And remember, personalized medicine is key. Treatment and follow-up need to be tailored to each patient.
Right. We need to consider their age, their comorbidities, the tumor characteristics, everything.
Exactly. And don't forget those regional variations in incidences like we talked about.
Yeah. That discussion about the higher rates in the north of the UK was really eye-opening.
Yeah.
It reminds us that epidemiology isn't just about numbers. It's about understanding the why behind those numbers so we can make a difference.
Well said. All right. So to all our listeners out there getting ready for the SCE in gastroenterology, best of luck. We're confident that you'll do great.
Absolutely. Keep those minds sharp, keep learning, and most importantly, take care of yourselves.
And your patients.